Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University. Before we meet our guest, I'd like to remind each of you about our partners at Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, events, with first-to-market odds and lines. Basketball's back, and Bet Online is your number one source for the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, game trends, and as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. Episode 81 of the podcast welcomes Jorn Scholl, current special teams coordinator in the European League of Football, who's positively influencing the growth of American football in Germany. Jorn, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I apologize if I've already butchered your name, but we'll get it right by the end. So how are you doing, man?
Yeah, hello, coach. It's an honor to be here and speak to you, speak about American football in Germany and in Europe. And yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. I have 1 month off. It's a great time for me because I got a newborn at home and yeah, everything is new. I've got one month off from school, no work and just football and the little one. And that's an exciting time for me at the moment.
Congrats, man. You know, we were talking off air last week when we were planning to record, and we are both new fathers. You know, I have two daughters, 6 and 3, and then I have a little boy who's, I think, a month different from your firstborn. So it's such a gift, you know. And speaking of gifts and fatherhood, like, football, it gives so much. And I'm talking to a guy right now who's 6 hours apart. We've known of each other, but we've never met. We've only talked one other time than just now. So it's truly a privilege to share this experience with, like, our audience who probably has no idea of the emergence of American football in Germany and Europe for that matter, and how organized it is, and how there's development leagues, and how there's good coaching, and how eager and hungry guys like you are to learn fourth down. You know, I think you guys have gotten to that point now where you were starting to delve into fourth down, which took Americans a long time to really have a lot of respect for. I mean, we can go back to yesterday. You know, I don't want to name drop because I used to train this young man, but there was a kid who missed two critical kicks that could have been the catalyst in a win for a team that desperately needed it yesterday. On the flip side, there was a guy who was the difference. Who made his 3 or 4 reps when called upon, and they won by less than 6. So I want to thank you before we start for what you're doing and for your friendship. But so let's just go right into it. Could you explain, like, there's a structure in all things, right? There's a way of doing it from like education standpoint. You go to elementary, then you go to middle, then you go to high school, then you go to university, and hopefully master's, and then you go to your doctorate, and boom, that's probably the pinnacle of that. I want to know the structure in place for American football in Germany right now. Like, when are kids starting? well, when is their deadline to figure out if I'm going to do this for real? Opportunities in college. And then, as mentioned last week when we talked, you enlightened me on a number of kids that are not only playing on Saturdays, but there's actually a pretty lengthy list of guys that are playing on Sundays now in the NFL.
Yeah, it's when we look at football in Germany, it's organized most of the time in a club system. So it's different to the United States, where everything is organized by the schools. Here it is historically grown that we have clubs where people come together and do different sports. They play soccer in clubs, they play tennis in clubs, they play hockey in clubs, and we also have clubs for American football. And I looked it up today. We have an organization that's called the AFVD. They organize all the clubs, and we have around 500 clubs that are offering American football for youth and adult players. And in these 500 clubs, there are over 70,000 members at the moment. And we have some bigger clubs with around 400 to 500 people in these clubs, playing from at the beginning 7 years old. We have got 7 to 10 year olds, 10 to 13 year olds, 13 to 16 year olds, 16 to 19 year olds. So always a difference of 3 years. 3 years played together in one group or one team, and they compete against other teams at their age. That is our youth program we have in Germany. So you can start at 7 and go up until 19. And if you are 19, you move over into the adult teams. We have different adult teams, different leagues. In our region, we have got 6 leagues for adult teams. And the highest league in Germany under the AFVD is the German Football League. We have a German Football League 2, a second division for the club teams. And a lot of players play football, learn football in these clubs. And that's the important part in Europe where people learn and play the sport, and where they develop, where we have coaches that develop. And everything is growing at the moment. We have got, I tried to look up some numbers. And for example, from the year 2018 to 2019, we have got a growth of players at around 7%. So 7% more players in 2019 than in 2018. And at the moment, it's growing fast here. I think it's one of the fastest growing sports in our country, in Germany. And if we look at the whole continent in Europe, around the half of the European players are playing in Germany. I try to compare it maybe with Austria, who are very good in playing American football, but they only have 70 clubs with around 9,000 members. So it's a difference to 70,000 players in Germany. So football is growing, and we have got different opinions on that, why it's growing. We have got the clubs who try to work with schools and offer flag football in schools. That's one way to get new players. And the growing of social media takes place and brings our sport, the sports we love, and that takes such a big time of our private life, of our work life, that brings our sports into the spotlight. I think the development of social media brings the sport in Germany especially to the people who never heard of it, who never played it. And that's why football is growing here, and we can see it when we look at the NFL broadcast. We never had a weekly NFL broadcast until the year 2015. So the first time we have weekly broadcast of NFL games started in 2015, and it's growing. When we try to compare the spectators of the Super Bowls, it's a big difference. We started in 2013 with 950,000 people watching the Super Bowl in Germany, and the highest number was in 2021 with 2,110,000 people in Germany watching the Super Bowl. With all the time difference, we stay up until 1 a.m. in the night, watching the whole night, and we have a lot of I think maybe crazy people who straight go from their Super Bowl party right to their work and have a complete work day after that. And I think that's a big sign that football is growing. We have got a lot of growing now, some growing numbers in the spectators in the stadiums. And what tries to connect a little bit to the NFL Euro we had in the early 2000s. That's a league for all the listeners who don't know this. That's a league that was completely sponsored by the NFL to make football to grow the publicity of football in Europe. And so they had different teams in the NFL Europe where they played, I think, more than 90% of college players from the US. They lived here for half of a year, played here football. And we have some home ground players, maybe around five in each team. But the most of the players are American players. And there was a big time. I remember when I was 11, 12 years old, I visited some games of the NFL Europe, and we had 20, 25, 30,000 people regularly watching football in Germany, in the stadium, watching the players from the US play here. And it was an exciting time, but the NFL decided that it's not worth to take all the costs, and they shut it down, I think, in 2005. And there are a lot of people who dreamed about this time back and tried to repeat it and make football more visible for the mass of people. And that's why they tried to set up the European League of Football 2 years ago. They started in 2021 in the first season. They expanded it a little bit in 2022 with 12 teams from all over Europe playing against each other. And next year there will be 16 different teams competing in the European League of Football. And that's the difference to the club system, is that this system is looking for or looking to the NFL, and we have got franchises there with GMs, with people who invest their money, and their goal is to get their money back. I think it's good for football. It's a different perspective on the game, and it's a different way to approach the game. Like I told before, the clubs are there to open football to everyone, to the youth, and that's very important. I think we can't have American football without the clubs, because they are the one who develop coaches, who develop players, and the European League of Football is trying to bring the product football to new spectators. And when we see what they have done over the last 2 years, they televised one game per week of the league, and we have got around 50,000 people watching the European League of Football games. And I think that's a good way, because it's presenting the sport to even other people than the people who are watching the games of our club teams here in Germany. So I think that is a basic overview of football here in Germany, how it's developed, and it's growing. And I think what's very important is that we have to have our coaches develop with it. We have to make sure our coaches can coach the game. Our coaches, are looking to what you are doing in the US, learn from you, and that's very important to I think to keep this growth of the game.
It's exciting, you know, the evolution of the game. The World Cup is in 20 days, you know, and I grew up a soccer player. My dad is English, so I didn't grow up with American sports. I was more of a, and I was watching the Bundesliga and Serie A and, you know, all these other things. But, you know, being in the United States, I was exposed to it. And I think that it's very important with globalization and technology. And it's just awesome that we are utilizing it for the good of the kids, right? Because I think a kid should have options. I don't think he should, because he lives in Germany, not be permitted to do something he likes to watch in the United States. I think he should. So it's because of guys like you who are going to facilitate the learning, which leads into my next question. The learning process, you know, it's got to be a little difficult, a little more, I should say, difficult if I was, in fact, in Germany to go and get instruction, because even in our country, there's a lot of instruction going on, but I think the cream rises to the top in terms of that. I think kids tend to go to like one of a few people in any given position group. So with that being said, how are you utilizing your resources and like how are you finding them? How are you coaches getting what you need to give back to the kids to develop them to hopefully come over here and play ball?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult question because it evolved over time. When I started coaching back in 2005, we don't have all the options we have today. There is no force on you. We can go to see the posts on Twitter or Instagram, pick some nuggets here and there. When I started coaching, we had some books scanned in from coaches who came over with the NFL Europe. We had some clinics the NFL Europe coaches did over the in that time, and that was it. We don't have that option. And then it's evolved over the internet. We have got some, we have coaches who read some blogs, who ordered books via Amazon. And I think everything grows over the last years. And I think the pandemic, how to use Zoom. And I think that's a big part, because now we can join a little bit more easy different clinics we had in the United States, for example, Lawrence First and Goal, the cool clinic who went to online clinics. And that's helping our coaching community, because the gap between the US and our coaches is getting a little bit more tiny. Because of social media, because of so many coaches who are willing to share knowledge, and I think that's very important, and that's what you, Coach Landy, are doing a tremendous job. And I know some kickers, some special team coaches who use your advices to share with the players. And last year I shared a lot of your clips with my players, and we try to discuss different things you brought up. You bring a very deep and technical perspective into the coaching, and I think that's something we can look up to, and where we can develop our game. And I think that's what it's all about. When I want to coach, I'm serving my players, and that's why from my perspective, it's important to learn and study the game and do everything to get better and to help my athletes in the way they want to do it to be successful. And when we look at coaches, and maybe that's an important note, when we look at coaches in Germany, I think around 90 to 95% are having a full-time job. No one is here a full-time coach. So I'm a full, for example, I'm a full-time teacher. And when I get home, That's my hobby, and I coach, I learn, I study as a hobby, and not as my work.
I think that's the only way to do it, really, in professional life. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to say that my professional life is coaching, but I always remind myself that to really never be stagnant, right? Never be satisfied, never be complacent. Always realize that you have deficiencies, or the work is never finished. The list is never completed. I think that's where greatness starts, you know, and I think that people who chase that and that are meticulous in their ways and always open to refinement, but married to their thoughts because their process came about several years of failing, right? There's a lot of ways to talk about this, but I love what you said is you really can't look at anything like work if you want to be successful, if you want to make it a career, in fact, because work is an ugly word. Work is almost like labor, right? And laborious is not a sexy word. It's a bad word, at least in our language. I think fun is a word I'd rather use, or excited or eager. And I think you're a guy who is, and I think that take it as far as you want, because there's going to be a need. What you're doing is generating a whole new market, and then there becomes need. And people need you over there, especially there. And then guess what? We start need you over here. Cause I like what you mentioned about perspective is, we've learned a lot from you guys in soccer, what we call soccer, others call football, but it's clear, it's evident. I mean, we're not going to beat England, in my opinion, in the World Cup, but I imagine that we're going to surprise them. I think we're going to make it a good game. I think we might get out of our group, and I think that that's a win for us. Just like in Germany, it's a win for you to get 2.1 million people to watch a game that starts at 1 a.m. and just roll through and watch it and then get up at 6 to go to work. I don't think a lot of Americans, I don't think proportionate. I mean, there's 330 million of us. I think proportionate, we'd be lucky to get 2 million that would really stay up and watch through the fourth, unless it was an epic battle, you know? So I don't want to go off on a tangent too much, but I did, obviously, I research people that are my guests. I want to know them as best I can without, like, I want to learn some things when I talk to them, but I did learn a lot about you. And I learned that you were a wide receivers coach, a linebackers coach, a head coach. You were a coordinator. Like, so 17 years of doing this, I want to know why special teams?
Yeah, I think when I look back, and especially at football in Europe, the special teams and especially specialists don't take a lot of time, don't take manpower to practice with them, to win with them. And from what I learned in 17 years of football, that these small things, and especially in special teams, that these things are making the difference in the game and making the difference in winning and losing. And I, when I look back at my games that I played, I think I lost more games with not focusing on special teams, not knowing what I can do, what I had to do, than the games I won and or we won. I think that led me to this part of the game, to make it better, to understand it better, to watch what the pros do, and I count you into the professional level, and I'm watching what you are doing. I try to adapt it to my players. I try to learn more about the game, and I think when we are looking at all the small parts of the body, of the movements, at every position, not only at the kicker, I try to look at the same different aspects. For example, in punt protection, I want to know how can I change different angles, how can I change the stance to get a little bit just 1 inch better. And if we do these little things, I think we can win more games. And we can give our players better ways to play the game, compete in the game, and ultimately win the games.
I want to just piggyback on that. I think that for a long time, especially when I grew up playing 90s it was known, I think globally, because my dad had an opinion, he was English, that football wasn't played by bright people per se. There were bright people playing, but it wasn't a collective unit of bright people, right, that were needed. I think that's completely changed. I think the game has evolved every year to becoming coached by smarter people, right? Played by smarter people. It's because, like what you said, is football is very structured. Soccer I liked because it was free flowing. I could mess up. You could beat me on a play, and I could recover on the same play, and maybe recover. That doesn't happen very often in football, because football is 6.5 seconds or less. Almost always the play is over and you either won it or you lost it. And guess what? Make up for it in the next play if you got beat. I like that. And I also like that 22 people should think like you, or should be coached by a coach that thinks like you, that if we are equal in ability, technique wins always. And guess what? If you're inferior in ability, technique will allow you to win maybe half the time,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially if you're first. If you make the first movement and it's effective, good luck, because the play is almost over. This isn't a soccer play that could, in fact, never end until the whistle blows after 45. This is it's a chess match, right? Mm-hmm. And it's led by very, very, very bright people, especially here. Like I'm looking at my buddy just got a job with the Dolphins. He's a special teams analyst, and their head coach is younger than me. He looks like a puppy, right? But I've listened to him talk like behind closed doors, and it's almost like he is, you know, those people that are almost too intelligent. They like don't know how to fundamentalize their thinking. That's He is so far. He's 3 or 4 steps ahead trying to retract to bring everyone where he is. But I think that's almost like the expectation now is your coordinators are brilliant people. Your quarterbacks have to think like them and with them. Your receivers, yeah, I mean, they have one job. They have one route to run, but it has to be meticulous. It has to be a 12 dig. You know, it has to be 4 steps and a pause and a go. You know, you can't breach it at 90. You got to run that 60. You're outside the seam. You got to adjust, you know, the wind. We told you in pregame, we were throwing the ball against the wind to the right pylon. And guess what? I get to chuck it at that thing because the wind keeps it in bounds. You just got to adjust. You know, these things, like, I don't think people realize the meticulousness of football. What's really going on? What's transpiring in 6.5 seconds? And how many, like you said, moving parts, and how many coaches' minds collectively, there's like 12 of them on one side of the ball for one given play. And if someone didn't coach it right or someone didn't execute it well enough, it's oftentimes enough to be the void in the situation. You lost that play. And I don't think that even us as Americans, our general public that watch the game, they're not really up to speed on all that yet. And I think when they slowly start finding that out, how much more is going on behind closed doors and already predetermined based on preparation, I think they'll fall even more in love with the game. So it really makes me feel good that you were saying these things, because you should be saying these things. You're the coach. You should be delivering this information and getting others to think as critically. And I think that's the biggest part of your job. So I want to kind of change the subject a little bit. Like, why are you here? Why do I know you? What's going on? You gave me an opportunity because I try to speak as much as I can to international, but it's not as prevalent, right? Like I speak to a group in Brazil. I've spoken to David Stretch in England, and now I get the opportunity to speak at an international coaches convention, which takes place in December. Could you share a little more about this event and how you got me involved in it?
Yeah, of course. It started back during the pandemic. I tried to organize some Zoom clinics for German coaches, and we started at first just with my staff, and we opened it up for some coaches, and then everything grows, and I think we had around 50 clinics over the years 2020, 2021. And had have around 20 20 coaches, 25 coaches on the different different topics, trying to listen and learn and asking questions. And that's why I want to continue this educational part, because I think it's not only important to listen to the things the coach says, because and that's why I want to have this Zoom clinics, because now we can ask questions. And I think that's very important, to ask questions, to develop and think about what you have learned, what you have listened to. And that's very, very important to work with all the information, to listen to it, think about it, and then restructure it and ask the question. And that's why these clinics and the different talks are so important, because that's offering us as European and German coaches the chance to ask and to interact with the different speakers. And you already mentioned David Stretch. He will present at our clinic too.
He's a nice guy.
He's a great specialty in my mind in Europe.
He reminds me a lot of you. You know, he's avid. I think every time NFL goes to London, David is there. You know, like
yeah, he was in Wembley. Yes, I think yesterday.
He doesn't miss a beat, and yeah, I mean he's in love. If there's someone who is in love, he is in love with it. And you guys remind me of one another. You know, you guys are very important. I think that it's got to take a number of people like you and David to make this really work. And I think there are. I mean, from what you're telling me, that people have a fondness for the game, you know, and really discovering that this is exciting, you know?
Yeah, so I think we have impersonal personal and life clinics in Europe. For example, the Bavarian Football Clinic, that's the biggest convention we have in Europe. And last year, due to COVID, they had around 300 coaches from all over Europe joining this clinic. We had the offense coordinator from Alabama on there. Pete Golding talked to our coaches, and it was an exciting clinic we had there. So there are a lot of coaches in Germany, in Europe, who wants to educate themselves, want to learn, want to grow, and want to give their players chances to improve. And for all the coaches who work with our younger kids, we have a lot of kids going to the US and play college ball from Germany, from different countries. They are moving over and play at different colleges.
You shocked me with that. You know, there was a— remind me the defensive end's name from Florida State a couple years ago that was a stud.
It's Björn Werner.
Stud. Yeah, you guys produce some big tough boys, but I am going to challenge you. I have one more question, but I am going to present a challenge to you. The Aussies have made quite a presence in punting in our country, and it's through the Aussie rules and just the skill set they have with bending it and making it, like, you know, do some funky things in the air. It's hard to receive it. But the way the Germans play soccer, come on now. I would imagine that England and Germany could tighten up a little bit with, hey, let's bring some kickers over here, some punters, hopefully too, but especially the kickers. I really feel like the Germans would be excellent ball strikers. I watched them play my whole life. I just don't think enough kids are getting a chance to, especially the elite German soccer players. They don't want them to touch an American football. I get it. However, I imagine there's a surplus of exceptionally gifted ball strikers that don't make the German national team. So, coach, just throwing it out there, I'd like to challenge you to get more of these studs just to give it a try. Give it a try, yeah. Right? They would love it.
Yeah, you're right.
I just want to ask you one more. This is a hypothetical, but it's something I've wanted to ask someone for a long time. I vividly remember NFL Europe, you know, and the Barcelona team and the Frankfurt guy. I remember that was interesting. I was fascinated that it was there, and I was more curious as to, because before realizing, you know, budgets and what they meant as a kid, I was like, why would they do away with it? And I totally get it. It's revenue, and it's not being able to pay your bills. But do you foresee— I think, like, there's a resurgence that's why we're talking today, in the passion, even outside of Germany for American football, but in Europe. Do you foresee that they something like that comes back to where we eventually maybe have an NFL franchise or two that are over there that have to travel a lot, but I think there's such a need and a demand for it now. Could you imagine the attendance and the stadium that would be built and the support that would be generated by it if you guys had your own piece of the NFL over there?
Yeah, I think that's a realistic thought, because I remember 3 or 4 weeks ago, they talked about maybe bringing over a franchise to London. They have around four games in London every year. I visit some two games in London myself. You mentioned David Stretch. He's visiting a lot of games in London, and there are many German football enthusiasts who fly over one weekend to London and try to see the NFL play there. So I think there will be a lot of spectators, and we have next month Tampa Bay playing against the Seattle Seahawks in Munich, and in Europe they had 600,000 ticket requests for only that game. 600,000 ticket requests for the game in Munich, and that's such a big number. I think it will be worth for the NFL to bring the teams over, play here. Next year they will play not in Munich, they will play in Frankfurt, an NFL game. They will have their four games in London, so we have four to five games in Europe at the moment from the NFL.
600,000. That is six plus big houses. Michigan football, biggest stadium, arguably sixfold plus some. That's insanity. And I don't even know. Is that a lottery then? I would say, like,
yeah.
I mean, how do you allocate? So you literally get a number and you get lucky.
Yeah, you got a number, and then you can buy up to, I think they had it up to five tickets for each number.
That's fair. I'm actually surprised that they would allow five.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I'm shocked, because, but that's insanity. And how do you ignore that? Those numbers, you've got to acknowledge it. Okay, we either need to have a permanent settlement there, or we need to every week we have a European game. I mean, why would they not do that? I think we're close, but again, putting a little pressure on you, Coach. We need a couple more EUs walking around, and we're good to go, because we've got to develop the youth. We've got to get Germans over here playing, and it started. It's just not, in my opinion, it's probably not to the volume that you guys probably are even producing. I think we've got to figure out that disconnect too. Is how are we going to market these kids? You know, how are we going to get their game film over? And I think a big disconnect a big uncertainty from my perspective as an American coach is if he is kicking butt in this German league I've never heard of, is the level of play something that I can evaluate, you know? But again, that's the onus of you and guys raising the level of play to where it's not a question, right? And I think you're close. I think it takes time, right? But I think you're close. So I want to ask you a very simple one. If people want to get a hold of you, I'd like you to offer a few ways with that, and also a link or how they can find this clinic that we will both be a part of.
I will post the link on Twitter. Well, I think we will have it ready around next week. You can hit me up at Twitter at @coachcolonia. Or if you like to on Instagram, it's coach_j_colonia. I will send you everything, so maybe you can put it into the show notes.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll add it to the episode notes in the pod, and also I will retweet anything leading up to the event, because I know you'll tag me in it. And majority of the listeners are also active with me on Twitter, so they will see it for sure. Just make make sure to a few times to tag me so I can remind everyone, because it's a neat experience. I get a lot of coaches on Twitter, of course, at the college level, that they're experts in offense and defense, but like you, there's a hunger and a realization that if I can get a little bit better, even incrementally better than my opponent, at how to talk to my kicker or how to train my kicker in season, not overuse him, I think it's a difference. I think it's one of the biggest difference makers if you've voided it your entire career and you're open to taking that information in. I think it's what you talked about to start the show, is this is inches, you know, this is seconds away from winning or losing. And you want to gain every inch you can that you have control over, right? So you're taking control of that. And I really, really appreciate you and for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was an honor to talk to you, coach. And yeah, if I can do anything else, just for every one of the listeners, if you have any questions about football in Europe or anything else, just hit me up on Twitter or Instagram, and I'll try to get back to you as quick as possible.
Absolutely. Thank you again. It means a lot to everyone at Fourth Down Focus that you were able to share information that will help us on and off the field. Please give us a 5-star rating, a review, subscribe to the show, share it with a friend. If you have questions or suggestions related to the show, you can reach me, Dan Lundy, in several ways. My website is fourthdownu, that's 4thdownu.com. On social media, you can find me by simply searching at fourthdownu. Thanks again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus, presented by Bet Online. We will see you next week with an exciting new guest, and I hope this fall, I can say that now, is treating each of you well. Remember, in all things, give thanks.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.